Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this Tuesday morning, July the 17th. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. Today's Senate session on Iraq could be a long one. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid is promising an all-night debate on the war. And Reid is angered by Republican insistence on a 60-vote threshold. And not a simple majority on a Democratic proposal to withdraw U.S. troops from Iraq by April. Democrats are trying to ratchet up the pressure on Republicans who have grown uneasy with the lack of progress and have begun questioning President Bush's military strategy. Republicans shrug off the planned marathon debate today and tonight as political theater. Only three Republicans have promised to back the Democratic plan: Chuck Hagel of Nebraska, Olympia Snow of Maine, and Gordon Smith of Oregon. So it's expected to fail. Meanwhile, two Republican senators have teamed up to push President Bush in charting a new course for the troops in Iraq, and they want him to seek reauthorization for the new strategy from Congress in April. Here's Senator John Warner on This Week with George Stephanopoulos on Sunday.
So what should a new resolution look like?
We very respectfully call on the president to make proposals to the Congress next fall such that on the anniversary, which is October, on that anniversary, we can hopefully come together in the Congress and revise that resolution so that our forces fighting and the world can see there's clear support between the Congress and the president's mission, as he's likely to modify it, in the fall.
So we will wonder if you agree with this approach proposed by Senators John Warner and Richard Lugar, or do you want to see the Democrats prevail with the proposal to pull troops from Iraq by the spring? Or do you think all of this is political posturing that means very little in the long run? We will talk about the GOP plan for Iraq, or at least this one, and how it compares to what the Democrats want to do. And we will welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Dale Hirschspring, professor of political science at Kansas State University, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations and former U.S. diplomat and naval officer, author of the book The Pentagon and the Presidency, Civil-Military Relations from Franklin Delano Roosevelt to George W. Bush, and Arrogance of Power, the forthcoming Arrogance of Power, Donald Rumsfeld, the Neocons, and the American Military. And he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
So let's start with this, the Senate session that's going to be a marathon session tonight. Do you agree with Republicans that this is just political theater that means very little?
Well, let me say, if the situation is reversed, Republicans do the same thing. Yes, it's political theater. I mean, Reid knows very well he's going to have the votes to pass it. And so he's doing this in a sense to try and embarrass the Republicans and in order to try and build a steamroller up so that by the time next election comes around next year, the Democrats will be in very good shape for both the presidency and the House.
Yeah. Well, why would the Democrats be in such good shape? Aren't the American people mad at the Democrats, too, for not somehow putting an end to this war?
Well, I mean, there is a certain segment of the far left and the people in general are turned off at Congress totally, although the individual members seem to be faring much better than in fact the reputation for Congress is a little below that of George Bush. So it gives you some idea as to how fed up people are with that. The problem is very simple, and I heard this from a commentator who was talking, she was a Muslim woman who was talking about the Islamic radicalism, and she said the problem in the United States is we aren't Americans. We're Republicans or we're Democrats. And that's really what you're seeing going on right now on the Hill.
Well, the Democrats have maybe put enough pressure on Chuck Hagel and Olympia Snow and Gordon Smith.
Well, certainly the latitude. Hagel, he's been off the reservation from the Republican standpoint for almost over a year. So, I mean, Hagel is no surprise. Snow certainly is, and Smith certainly, whether surprised, I mean, that they're certainly, people thought they might come to him, but they're certainly new, defections, if you want to call it that. And, you know, the Republicans in the House and the Senate who are coming up for election are obviously worried about the next election because of the public attitude toward the whole thing in Iraq. I mean, we can talk about that if you want, but the people are upset about that, and, you know, nothing seems to be happening.
Yeah. Well, Lugar and Warner, though, have come up with this other idea. Right. Explain this this plan that Lugar and Warner want.
Well, the plan would basically, the president would, first of all, renegotiate either the fall or next year when they get around the reason why we're in Iraq, because there were the reasons given in the original congressional thing passed in the Senate are no longer exist. I mean, there is no weapons of mass destruction. There was no connection between Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein, so they would renegotiate it. My problem, there was two problems with that, basically, that issue, what they're doing. First of all is Petraeus is coming back in September, and as Hadley has argued, we need to wait for him to come back and see. And second of all, I am not certain I understand how you would set up something in Iraq where not engaged in combat. As long as there's a soldier in Iraq, there will be combat.
Yeah, they're calling for the troops not to engage in combat.
Well, they're talking about pulling back, guarding the borders, going just after Al Qaeda. The problem is that's what we've been doing, going after Al Qaeda. That's a good part of what we're doing, is basically trying to take down the militias. The other part is to try and go after Al Qaeda and hurt Al Qaeda. We certainly have in the Anbar province, and we certainly have in parts of Baghdad. So I just don't understand how you operationalize that, to use a nice term, so that you only thing that you get involved in is just guarding the borders, chasing around after Al Qaeda, things like that.
Yeah. Well, that aside, what about asking the president to come back before Congress to seek a reauthorization for a new plan?
Well, I mean, this gets us into this whole question of war powers and the War Powers Act and that sort of thing, which no president has ever recognized, and which Congress seems to think that they have. The executive certainly does not want a situation in which its hands are tied in certain areas, in which the flexibility is limited, and that's what a new one would do. What Warner is doing right now is just saying, hey, look, everything is chaotic. We need to come back and restructure this thing so it makes some sense. And in that sense, they're probably right. And I suspect that after Petraeus comes back, the president may move in that direction. He certainly can't keep going the same direction he's going. The difficulty we have is that democracies are not very good when it comes to fighting counterinsurgency wars, because they take a long time. Took the Brits, so the model is Malaya, and took the Brits almost 12 years to win that one, and over 12 years to win Northern Ireland. So we're fighting what they call nonlinear warfare. In other words, it's not my troops bash into your troops, it's my troops are there and yours are all in the middle of mine, I don't even know where they are.
I'm going to take a caller to get us started here. Victor in Milwaukee, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning to your guests.
Good morning to you.
I didn't get caught up in the euphoria when the Democrats won majorities, you know, in Congress about this war and the path of the war changing overnight. I knew this was going to be trench warfare, so it's probably going to take another election or two to really set up Congress in a way to turn this war around. And I didn't expect a lot, so I'm thinking Congress is doing all what they can do. The Democrats are doing all what they can do. They knew they were going to run resistance from the Republican side. So I didn't really expect a lot. But again, I'm expecting the next election or two will change this thing around. And also, and I have issue with Bush telling the Congress that you're not the managers of this war. Well, he's mismanaged it so much. Who else have we got left but the Congress to counterbalance him?
Mm-hmm. Well, Victor, those are very interesting, good points. Before I take your last one first. The problem we have with the entire thing of who's managing the war is that in the original Constitution, the drafters created a real big ambiguity. The president is commander-in-chief, and the generals work directly for him, but Congress appropriates money, so Congress is also involved. What I think, and I was on the Hill working for Les Aspin many years ago, and I think what they're trying to talk about is if you you can't have 535 different strategies for what to do in Iraq, and that's exactly what you find happening very quickly, because every congressman or senator thinks that they've got the answer and how to do it. I think your evaluation of the last election was absolutely accurate. If what your goal is to get troops out, I don't think anybody is going to just simply pull them out. The Democrats pushed that hard in Vietnam, and it took them almost 12 to 14 years to overcome the anti-security view, and that's something they don't want to have right now, given the problems with terrorism.
We're talking with Dale Hirschbring, professor of political science at Kansas State University, talking about the politics of Iraq and congressional efforts to change course in Iraq. We have two Republicans teaming up now with a new idea. Senators John Warner and Richard Lugar want the president to chart a new course for Iraq and then come back to Congress seeking reauthorization for the new strategy in October. What do you think of that? 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890. At the same time, the U.S. Senate today starts a debate on Iraq, and today's session could be a long one. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says there will be an all-night debate on the war. Democrats trying to pass a proposal to withdraw U.S. troops from Iraq by April. However, only three Republicans have promised to back this plan: Chuck Hagel, Olympia Snowe, and Gordon Smith. So it is expected to fail. But Democrats are trying to keep the pressure on Republicans and maybe cause more Republicans to join ranks with Democrats. We welcome your thoughts and questions about this for our guest at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890. What do you want to see from Congress on Iraq? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Ben Marins is with you this afternoon between 4 and 6 for At Issue with Ben Marins. After 5, Ben's guest calls for a complete shift in U.S. foreign policy to create a safer future for America and the world. We're talking about the future of U.S. involvement in Iraq with Dale Hirschbring, professor of political science at Kansas State University, talking about efforts in Congress to withdraw troops from Iraq by this spring. The Senate debates that Democratic proposal today and probably all night, one that would call for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq by the spring. We're also examining a new plan, a GOP plan from Republican Senators John Warner and Richard Lugar, that asks President Bush to plot a new course for Iraq and the troops there, and to seek reauthorization for this effort in October. Here's Richard Lugar talking on This Week on ABC on Sunday about the Lugar-Warner plan.
Now, I'm not hoping that we leave. The proposal I think that Senator Warner and I are making is that we are going to have a presence, because for the diplomacy to work, for the others to have credibility, we have to be there. We have to train people. We have to keep down terrorists. We have to keep looking for the Al-Qaeda. What we're looking for now are plans that are much more realistic with the use of our troops in Iraq, in the Middle East, and worldwide.
And Professor Hirschbring, that's what you have a problem with this plan, that it limits the activity of the troops in Iraq?
You can categorize that, if somebody takes a car and puts a bomb in it and blows the car up, how do you know? Is that something we're supposed to go after? Well, what, maybe it wasn't Al-Qaeda. I mean, what he's trying to do, and I understand both of them, I have great respect for him, particularly for Lugar, what he's trying to do is to say, look, the president's policy now is chaotic. Nobody in Washington knows what our policy is vis-a-vis Iraq. We need to sit down and instead of floating around with the way we are, we need to come back and get a meaningful policy. Well, and he's right. I mean, it is chaos in terms of what is our policy in Washington. But how can you get a policy that means this or that? But it's very hard to implement.
We have an open line for you, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. If you have a question about this approach proposed by Warner and Lugar, or what the Democrats want to do, or what you want to see Congress do when it comes to U.S. involvement in Iraq, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. John in Slinger is with us. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I just have more of a general comment, listening to all this war stuff for months and months. My comment is I've got a problem with people who say they support the troops in Iraq, and yet they don't support or believe in the cause for which these troops fight. I think this has an undermining effect in the whole resolve. So I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
I think that my son-in-law's been tapped to go to Afghanistan in February. I mean, I have some familiarity with the way people feel. And I was living right here on top of Fort Riley. Yes, I think that's a fair comment. I think it is true that a lot of the people in the military feel that way. The guys out in the field are so busy doing their job, staying alive, and a lot of them are working 14, 16 hours a day doing that kind of thing, that I don't think they pay that much attention to what's going on back here. But I'm told you have Fox TV on every day in most of their billets where they have a TV, and they know what's going on. You get different answers from people. A lot of people say, you know, look, these guys are just so overwhelmed with what they're doing. It's a lot of the guys back here who are not, who I guess get very disappointed. They hear everybody bashing the war, and they're the ones that are supposedly out there to try and do the job.
Yeah. A lot of critics say, though, that they support the troops and that they don't want to see any more of the troops killed in a civil war, policing a civil war.
Well, and that's a fair point. That's a valid point. We are in a civil war. I mean, if you want to know the problem, the essence of the problem in Iraq is we cannot get political agreement because the Shiites outnumber the Sunnis. And a comment we heard last weekend, you know, you don't like it, go home, from Maliki, they're betting that if we leave, there'll be a civil war and they'll slaughter the Sunnis. The Kurds are basically betting that they'll just stay up north and build Hadrian's Wall again, and they'll be an independent entity. So until you can get the Shia to believe that there's something that's in their interest to compromise with the Sunnis, we're not going to have it. And we have basically, in many cases, what amounts to a civil war. And it's been, frankly, I think, until Petraeus went there, and to be very honest, I certainly found this in writing the book, it's been completely mismanaged from the very beginning, primarily by the civilians in the Pentagon.
Let's take our next caller, Jack in Oak Creek. Hi, Jack. You're on the air.
Hello. Good morning. Good
morning.
I think a central point we should be discussing more about our leaders and the American people is about the training of the Iraqi forces to defend their own country. I was in Vietnam a couple years, and I found out that after 12 years of trying to get the Vietnamese to defend their country, it never worked. And now my question is, did the U.S. generals and colonels, those young guys like I was in Vietnam, learn anything from the training failure in Vietnam? And is anything being done about it? It's going to all be about if we cannot get out of Iraq unless there's a reasonably good Iraqi defense force. And it's not looking good right now. Could your guests please comment?
Mm-hmm. Sure, Jack. That's a very valid point. Let me just explain some of the background so you understand why it's not worked. First of all, because of Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and Feith, we went into Iraq with far fewer troops than we should have. General Zinni's original estimate was 380,000 to 400,000. General Shinseki said several hundred thousand. We went in with about 120,000, and we didn't have troops to engage in training. And so what we did is we hired contractors. First problem we had is you get somebody who's a retired drill instructor, retired from the Marine Corps, and you start yelling at people the way we were always yelled at. That doesn't work in Iraq. So there was an adaptation. They were underfunded. It is also not a job that is a career-enhancing job. On top of that, you have the problem that they say the difficulty is we can teach them how to shoot a gun, we can teach them how to march, but their heads are still hooked into their ethnic background or into their tribe. And to try and get Sunnis and Shias to cooperate on a battlefield is not like it's 100 times more different than taking a boy from Georgia and a boy from Idaho and telling them, putting them together and making them cooperate. They don't have that kind of deep, deep-seated feelings. I don't think we can even comprehend how bitter the feelings are between certainly the Shia and the Sunnis, or in the Kurds and the Sunnis.
Yeah, so the U.S. Training Iraqi troops, it's not the same as it was in Vietnam.
Well, I mean, in Vietnam, they actually turned out some very good troops. You know, some of the Marines, the Vietnamese Marines were very good. Some of the other units weren't, but, I mean, you know, Jack is right that it was not a whole big successful, but it was a lot more successful in Vietnam than it's been in Iraq, primarily because the Vietnamese didn't have, you know, we hate this group and they hate that group, and those two groups have to sit together in a foxhole.
Yeah, so it's the interim report, though, says only 8 of the 18 benchmarks are being met, at least somewhat satisfactorily.
Right, and none of the political ones.
Yeah, so...
And those are the big ones. I mean, those are the ones that Condi Rice called are right. Those are really basically what you call reconciliation. And none of them are being met. The oil things, the local elections, there's about 4 of them. I can't think of the other 2 now.
Well, I mean, do we really think that in a month or two that it's going to really turn around?
No, it absolutely will not. I mean, let me think of the 2-part answer. First of all, we are like the little boy, Dutch boy with his finger in the dike, okay? We pull our finger out, and God knows what will happen. I mean, it could be turned into you could be paying $6 or $7 a gallon for gas. We don't know where it's going to go. And so, you know, that's a problem. Second problem was what if the army had followed Petraeus's approach of counterinsurgency, and this is not just a surge, it's a whole new way of fighting a war. If they had followed that approach in the beginning, I think we see a whole different situation. The problem with counterinsurgency is it's really about winning hearts and minds, and that takes time. The Marines have done a successful job in Anbar province now. The Sunnis are pointing out to them who the Al-Qaeda are, and they've turned against Al-Qaeda, they've turned against the insurgents. We don't have that in Baghdad. How long will it take? Oh, 5 years, 6 years, who knows how many years it'll take. It's a very slow process, but if we had done it 4 years ago, I suspect we'd be in a whole different situation than we are now.
Yeah, so Professor Hirschspring, what happens then in September when the full report from Petraeus comes our way?
Well,
and it's not going to be necessarily very successful.
That's a very valid point. And what you can sure Jack Reed will jump all over it, and he'll say, you know, this is just horrible, you're unsuccessful. Petraeus will say that using our approach, we have made significant progress. Now, the significant progress is not going to be turning water into wine. That's what Reed's going to bash him for. So it'll be another case of the Republicans defending him and the Democrats pounding all over him. I met Petraeus. He's a very thoughtful and incredibly bright guy. And he won't lie. And so what will happen, the Democrats will scream louder and the Republicans will scream louder. And we'll, the Muslim lady said, we'll show the rest of the world we're not Americans, we're Democrats and Republicans.
Mm-hmm. But from all of your experience and knowledge of this issue, do you just presume, and I know it depends on what exactly is said in September, but presume that U.S. troops will continue doing what they're doing through President Bush's administration?
My suspicion is that I think that Lugar, Warner, Elizabeth, first of all, American policy toward Iraq is like a ship floating at sea without an anchor and without a rudder. We're just sort of, we're there. We don't really know what it is we want to do, except that there's a vague thing. We want to stay there until the Iraqis are able to take care of themselves. Well, how long is that going to be? Who knows? The Al-Qaeda is a very, very vicious organization to fight, and Arab armies traditionally have not been very good and in the way they do things. And so how long it'll take us to get their militaries in halfway decent shape, the police is in horrible shape. How long will that take? Who knows? But I think what Lugar and Warner are trying to do is they're saying to the White House, look, you don't have a policy. Here, let's, why don't we go ahead and do this and give us some rationality. This will give Republicans some cover in the next upcoming election, and we can go ahead and have a rediscussion next April, March, whatever, and that will give the guys who are running for re-election something to hide behind, and we will still be there. I think that's where they're moving. I did the paper today. New York Times, Washington Post, both have articles about the Pentagon. The Joint Chiefs are already studying options for getting out. And now that the military, I mean, don't get me wrong, what that says is not that we're getting out. That just says the military always tries to plan ahead for whatever could be coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And so the military is already looking at the possibility if we were to leave, what would happen there? What would be the result? And they're all very bloody and very nasty, and all they're using basically war games to do it. And it's very bloody, it's very nasty. Some bloodier than others. Some say it'll be a couple hundred thousand kills. Others say you could be millions die in a bloodbath. Who knows? You could. Others can say it'd be turned into a Middle Eastern war with the Iranians in the middle and them coming in, and the Saudis and Jordanians come in, and God knows where it can go. It's clear that what we have right now is not working, and it's not being supported. And I think that's what Warner and Lugar, because Warner is no dove by any means. He's a hawk, if anything. Mm-hmm. He's basically saying, Mr. President, time out. We've got to come back here and run up a new game plan, get Congress to approve it, and then we can go on from there. And it'll also make the election a lot easier on Republicans.
All right, let's go to Jeff in Onalaska. Hi, Jeff. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You've somewhat touched on what my question is while I was waiting to get on, and that is, you know, what are the consequences of us just lock, stock, and barrel pulling out in April? You mentioned, you know, bloodbaths and you know, $6 a gallon gasoline. If we're looking to, you know, protect our troops get us out of there. What's going to happen if we just do pull out? Does anyone know specifically?
Well, let me just give you the thing that I found the most pregnant in terms of a thought as to what would happen, and that is that UN, the head of the UN has basically asked us not to do that. He's not saying don't withdraw, but he's saying no precipitous withdrawal, because he's that concerned. It's about what could happen if we got up and just sort of said, you know, hasta la vista, we're out of here. He's come back to the South Korean and said, please don't do that. One of the reading these studies that the military has done and having seen and worked on some of them, none of them are absolutely, none of them can be taken as, aha, I now know. What they are all indicating is that if you put things on a speedometer, And 1 to 10 is bad, and 90 to 100 is good, they're saying that the consequences will be somewhere between 20 and 30, and in terms of being bad. And that means that, the ultimate is that you get into a Middle Eastern war, and, you know, you can kiss your gas. We all need to start riding bicycles. Probably better for us anyway. But anyway, gas will go through the ceiling. The only reason the United States is in the Middle East, to be quite honestly, is we need oil. And it's not the oil companies. It's because you and I and everybody else drives their cars probably more than they should. And we're set up that way. And if there wasn't oil in the Middle East, we probably wouldn't even care.
Thank you, Jeff, for the call. Dave in Presque Isle. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I guess I want to continue that discussion about what's going to happen. And I remember reading a column by Thomas Friedman about 3 or 4 months ago, and he said right now the Iraqis are paying wholesale for the deaths that are going on. Once we leave, they're going to have to start paying retail. I think they know that, so they're trying to put us or keep us there for as long as possible. And I think the Republicans are trying to figure out, does it benefit them if we leave before the elections or leave after? I think Cheney's figured it out that after the elections, then Bush can say, well, see, if they'd have done what we wanted to do, this bloodbath wouldn't happen. But it's going to happen no matter what. It's just a matter of figuring out who benefits by happening before the election or after.
Well, Dave, first of all, I have great respect for Friedman. I mean, Friedman, I think, is probably one of probably the best journalists in this entire country on anything international. I've heard him speak. I've talked to him, and anything he says, you know, I stop and listen. And I think you're right about paying retail and paying wholesale and being forced to pay retail. I don't think that that is really... I have trouble, the average Iraqi, really figuring that out, that we're keeping the price down. I think that it's so hooked up in this ethnicity sort of thing that that sort of a thing, as true as it may be, is just simply as it never crosses their mind.
Yeah. What about that the bloodbath is going to happen no matter when the U.S. troops withdraw, whether it's this April or next April?
Well, now you're getting into the lovely amoral world of Washington. Mm-hmm. When somebody sits down and makes a calculation as to is it going to help us or not, let's just say, for example, it's Hillary or Obama running, and it's Fred Thompson running on the other side. I'm just making that up. And then it might be having a bloodbath might well benefit Thompson, because you're going to trust trust this to a woman, and Obama is so liberal. I'm just saying that's the game that'll be played. Mm-hmm. And if you do it afterwards... Well, I don't see, you know, Bush, what good's it going to do? The question really is it going to be beneficial to do it before or not beneficial to do it before? Because after doesn't mind, because let's say if Hillary wins and she pulls troops out and it's a bloodbath, well, it's all Georgia's fault.
We're talking with Dale Hirspring. He's a professor of political science at Kansas State University, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, a former U.S. diplomat and naval officer, also the author of a number of books, including the forthcoming Arrogance of Power, Donald Rumsfeld, the Neocons, and the American Military. Professor Hirspring is talking with us about this new plan from Republican Senators John Warner and Richard Lugar, calling for a new course for our troops in Iraq, and also calling on the president to go before Congress to ask for reauthorization of the war and the new strategy in October, and talking about how that compares to what Democrats are trying to do today. The Senate will be pulling an all-nighter debating the war. There will be a proposal by Democrats to withdraw troops by April. That proposal expected to fail. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest and wonder what you want to see Congress do about this issue. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network, and I hope you stay tuned. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn and her guest will discuss presidential candidate John Edwards' 8-city tour with a focus on poverty. That's after 9, and then after 10, hearing loss, especially for those over the age of 65. That's coming up. Kathleen Dunn, between 9 and 11 this morning. We're talking about Iraq and Congress and what Congress is trying to do about troops in Iraq. Dale Hirspring, our guest, professor of political science at Kansas State University. And a story on the AP Wire this morning, Professor Hirspring, as the Senate prepares to pull an all-nighter debating the war, President Bush reportedly says he has no confidence in the UN to salvage Iraq if the U.S. withdraws. According to a participant in a surprise meeting with the president, the source says President Bush dropped in on a gathering of Republican congressional staffers and White House aides. They're trying to come up with an effective communication strategy for the war. The participant says the president told the staffers he will not rethink his Iraq policies until after this report on political and military progress in Iraq is released in September. Any comments on
his last comment is what was the same thing that Hadley said last Sunday, and Meet the Press, I guess. But the same thing he said then, and that's the White House line: we're not going to do anything until September, when Petraeus comes back, and then he lays out what's working, what's not working, and that's been consistent policy. And so I don't think anything's going to happen until after then. I think the president is hard over on that, and that's exactly where he's going to stay. until whatever date in September they pick for Petraeus to come back.
Yeah. Any comment on Republican congressional staffers and White House aides trying to put their heads together for an effective communication strategy for the war?
Well, that has been a major problem. I mean, particularly during the Rumsfeld period. I mean, he wouldn't even let his people talk to the State Department. That's how bad things were. And I think that one of the things that people are saying is that, look, if we're going to be in Iraq and Afghanistan, then we've got to try and make sure that the staffers, who are the ones who really run the Hill anyway, know what we're doing and feel free to come and talk to us, and we have lines of communication open.
1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Wondering what approach you favor in terms of congressional proposals to somehow change or end U.S. involvement in Iraq. Patty in Madison, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I may be a little naive, but I haven't heard much talk about the possibility, could we actually be training the Iraqi troops about the U.S. tactics, which could be used against us in the future if they become terrorists or if different individual areas become terrorists? I just am curious. I haven't heard any talk about that.
That's a good point, Patty, and in some sense, it's possible. I mean, you saw the American Army trained sniper, what he pulled off in Wyoming. I mean, once a person knows how to use a gun, they know how to use a gun. But explosives, stuff that's basically that has been used against us, is really pretty primitive. It's pretty simple. The thing that they tried in London that didn't work. I mean, these things are really not complicated. The point is, you have to ask yourself, we can't leave, in my view, until we have some sort of stability in that country. If your object is to avoid some sort of a cataclysmic event, and the only way that's going to happen is for us to train the Iraqi army. The Iraqi army would never be any kind of a contest with the United States Army. But those people who are trained, yes, people, some of the ones who fought the Mujahideen in Afghanistan are now in Iraq, and their military experience, what they were trained by the CIA, probably helps them. But this is a gamble you have to take.
Thanks, Patty. Paul in Slinger is with us now. Hi, Paul.
Hey, good morning. You know, Bush and Cheney has, you know, really marched us into the hellish abyss of Dante's hell. And all one has to do is study early European history, the religious wars, and see the brutality and the heinous crimes that were committed. And that is going to play it out here. Here you have a heretic sect of Muslim that are competing with supposedly the original branch of Muslim of Islam, and you have to enlighten. I mean, you can train a dog, and you're suggesting training the army. Well, the point is, they still are either a Sunni or they are a Shiite, and you know, sending young men over there that have a high school education between 18 and 25, can't speak the language, walking in narrow medieval streets. The first thing you're going to do is going to try to come back alive. You're going to shoot and ask questions later. And so we have the blind leading the fanaticals in that country. And my opinion here is that they're just as we did in the religious wars of Europe, they will fight to exhaustion. And believe me, the oil will still flow because the dollar, the money, just study your economic history. We will still get our oil. We might pay $5 a gallon for it, but.
Yeah. The fighting will never end, Professor Hirschspring.
Well, I mean, there's very little that I can disagree with what Paul said. It wasn't so much Bush that got us into this. It was Cheney supporting Rumsfeld and his little courtier. But my problem with what Paul was saying is simply the same thing one of my bosses used to look at me and say, woulda, coulda, shoulda, mighta, never solved anything. Now, how do we deal with the issue we've got at hand? And he's saying we can't deal with it. Well, then we're just stuck there for, until another 25 years when they exhaust them fighting. But that's not really an option. The difficulty I've always had is not that I thought the Democrats were not right by saying this is a dumb war, we shouldn't be in it, let's get out of it. It's to say, okay, how are you going to do it in a way that doesn't destroy American interests? And to this point, I've not heard one.
Jerry in Waterford, hi, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. You know, I'd like to see the troops come out today if possible, but I'm concerned because of the fact of what Senator Lieberman has to say. You know, he's a very intelligent man, a very experienced man. He probably would have been the front runner or one of the front runners in the Democratic nomination coming up here for president if he hadn't taken the stand that he did. So he must feel very, very intense for the benefit of the United States to look at this thing carefully. He's saying that if we leave there, they're going to come after us. And also, if gas goes to $6 a gallon, it's not just going to be problems at the pump. We're going to have companies going bankrupt. The airlines are going to go under. Your food is going to go up 30% because there's a high transportation cost involved there. So there's a lot of things to consider here, and I'd just like to have the commentators speak to that, if you would, please.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jerry, those are very thoughtful comments. I mean, I happen to be a very big fan of Lieberman, I guess primarily because of his willingness to stand up for what he believes and sort of pay the consequences for it. And I think you've also said something that I think is extremely important that people aren't realizing. They drive their... You know, the 6-cylinder, 8-cylinder car to the demonstration, and they go demonstrate and drive it home without realizing it's not only that their car is not going to be, it's going to go through the roof, but everything. I mean, as you're right, vegetables. I was originally from California. There's a lot of those things that have to be. You know, they run on gas to keep the irrigation going. Some cases, but you're going to have all of your commodities, and then you're right. Right now, because of the price of gas, it's anecdotal, but you read all the time about companies going out of business because their profit margin was so narrow, and that the cost of energy went up. This is why I'm saying, just saying let's just come home tomorrow is not really a viable option, because I don't think people who say that have really thought through what that means, and that doesn't mean that I say I have a good answer to the question. I don't. I'd be the first one to say that, but I don't think pulling out just blithely is a viable option.
Yeah, why would pulling out of Iraq mean they are going to come after us here?
Because, and he's right about that, that's one place where the Vietnam simile doesn't really hold, because the Vietnamese wanted us out so they could be Vietnamese. This is I think we're dealing the comment that Paul made. We're dealing with a whole different kind of animal now. We're dealing with religious fanatics for whom death is a reward. It's a wonderful thing, and they have this evangelistic sort of fervor that they will come and get us here, regardless of whether we're there or not. They're still the Germans aren't in Iraq, and yet the German security services are going nuts trying to, because they're so petrified of a major bomb. So are the French. French security services tend to be very good, and they are having a nightmare trying to protect themselves from the same thing. So it's different from when you have a nationalistic thing. A nationalistic effort in Vietnam was Vietnam for the Vietnamese. This is, you know, and I'm not talking about all Muslims, but then that radical small segment, this is the world for Islam, and they're going to go after anybody, regardless of where you are.
Yeah, well, Al-Qaeda could do that right now, right? Why would I have to wait for U.S. to pull troops from Iraq? Al-Qaeda report says that pre-9/11 strength and...
Right, yeah, you're right. I'm just saying, well, I guess I should probably rephrase what I said and say that what getting out of Iraq is not going to solve the problem, that problem. Mm-hmm. Getting out of Iraq, they would still be coming after us, because the argument is made by some people that if we get out of Iraq, they'll go home. I'd be the first one to say that being in Iraq exacerbates the problem we have with radical Islam. It's absolutely true. But getting out of Iraq is not going to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. They're still going to be coming after us simply because we exist.
Charlie in Fitchburg, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I would like to suggest a couple things as a way of getting out of Iraq. I think the first thing is that we have to have credibility, which has been pretty much decimated. I think that starts with telling the truth. The truth is we made a mistake going in. I think we need to acknowledge that. I think we need to set a specific deadline for pulling out so that people in Iraq understand that we don't have designs on their oil or their resources or controlling their country. I think that the notion that if we pull out that they'll come after us here is somewhat ludicrous. I think our presence there is more likely to enhance the possibility of our being attacked than if we were to pull out. The other thing is I think the reality is that our presence there is not a source of stability, it's a source of instability.
Yeah, we have, we're short on time, and you brought up many points, Charlie. So our presence there is part of the problem, Professor Hirschsprung?
Oh, I see. I said I think our presence there exacerbates certainly the al-Qaeda mm-hmm. problem, and I think that our presence there, had we never gone in, Iraq would be stable. Fact is, Iraq is unstable, and we're in there, and his other points very quickly. The truth, no administration is going to do that and say we really screwed up going there. That's just not going to happen. They may do that down the line and when they're retired. And setting a deadline is basically telling the bad guys, you know, just hang loose till this time and then we're going to be gone. It also, you know, you can say, well, it's going to make the Iraqis behave and come up with something, but they probably won't. They'll just say, we'll just stay like we are right now and then we'll slaughter the Sunnis when the time comes. And I do think the argument can be made that they're going to come after us here, regardless of whether we're there or not.
Yeah. Well, in our final minute or so, Professor Hirschsprung, I don't know, what's your assessment of the next couple of months in terms of what Congress is going to do about the Iraq situation?
Well, I mean, Reid and Pelosi will do everything they can to make political theater out of it. That's what's happening tonight. They're trying to sort of create the momentum that the Republican Party has shot its wad. And to some degree, they're right. It has. And so I think there's going to be a lot of this. The Germans have a wonderful expression. They say people speak by one another. And I think that's what we're going to be doing. It's going to be the Republicans talking to themselves, Democrats talking to themselves. Unless they get more than three defections, nothing's going to change.
You think the Lugar-Warner thing might be considered?
I think that is a start for some sort of a compromise. I think the president's going to recognize after Petraeus has come back, then I think he will say something to the effect that privately to Lugar and Warner, let's see if we can't come up with something that will make some sense. Okay. You know, right now, nothing's going to happen until Petraeus comes back.
Professor Hirschsprung, thanks a lot for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Dale Hirschsprung, professor of political science at Kansas State University, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, former U.S. diplomat and naval officer, author of many books, including the forthcoming Arrogance of Power, Donald Rumsfeld, the Neocons, and the American Military. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.